broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wakefield Crowbar. It's the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Brian McDonald.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, that's how you do it, Paul. Gee, someone put some energy in Paulie's ass. Let's let him have the good rest of the day. We're going to have a great day for the next 3 hours. How we doing? Brian McDonald with me at Wakefield Crowbar, where we love to be, where it is a lot of pretty people hanging out at a really cool establishment while we get ready for NCAA basketball, Brian. We had a Rockets game last night, and let me just tell you. Yeah. Oh, boy, that was entertaining.
Yeah, look, obviously you would rather Alperen Şengün be out on the floor, but that started to look like the Rockets' potential that I think we'd all felt like the team had after they hired Udoka, obviously after the 3 straight years of picks in the top 4 of the draft. It took a long time to get to this point. We'll see if it actually continues over the rest of the season into next year. But they finally started to look like the team with the potential and promise and hope that I think a lot of fans were expecting once they made the coaching change and got all this talent on the roster.
Yeah, look, I think, Brian, the bigger question is, and I heard Joe and Paul a little bit touching on it. You and I were talking about it and want to get into it as well. But the fact of the matter is, I think it's a good problem to have that Jalen Green is finally showing signs that he could develop into something close to what you thought you were getting when you drafted him. And I don't think at this point in anybody's career on this roster, it should be about one or the other. It should be
no, definitely not.
Whether I am developing all the assets, some of which are for others, or I'm just trying to see how good they can be in terms of the guys that you have. It's a lot more encouraging than it's been, say, 6 months ago and a year ago when you were like, man, some of these guys look like they can't play dead, and I don't know where this entire franchise is going.
Yeah, I honestly don't get the rush that some people seem to show to trade people off of this team. Like, as soon as someone starts to play well, they start to talk, well, what can we get for him? Who can we move him to get something else? Well, Jalen Green, obviously you don't expect 42 points every night, but if Jalen Green can play at this level that he has, and this hot streak goes even beyond just Alperen Şengün going out. He was getting hot about 4 games before Şengün got hurt. But if Jalen Green is playing at this level, you'd be trying to trade him to get someone to play at this level. So if you think Jalen Green can be that type of player, and he was picked at number 2 to be this type of player, then why are you in a rush to get rid of him?
Yeah, look, when I look at this entire situation, I still am not sold on Jalen Green. Like, I went from a month-to-month lease to I'm looking to get a full renting going to. Yeah, look, I'm looking for the rest of this season to keep seeing these kind of things from him. I like his value going up regardless. I like the fact that he's learned how to play team basketball. I like when you hear quotes out of his head coach's mouth that he's finally satisfied with the fact that he's playing defense. He's doing other things. He's filling up the box score, even when he's not shooting consistently. And then you see a game like last night where you go, hey, if he was doing everything up until last night, he's showing progress. When he does what he did last night, now you're getting into what you said about where he was drafted and what he was supposed to be when you took him.
Right, yeah. And look, I'm interested to see what you kind of hinted at it there, but I'm interested to hear what you say about this. Is this just a hot streak from Jalen Green, or is this the player he's capable of being? So last 6 games for Jalen Green, right now, during those 6 games, he's averaging 27.8 points per game. Obviously, with Alperen here coming back, I would assume that average will go down a little bit. But beyond that, you mentioned some of the other things coming around his defense. I think we also wanted to see him shoot better, because even when he was scoring, his shooting numbers weren't all that great. But during that same 6-game streak where he's averaging nearly 28 points per game, he's shooting 50% from the field and 44% from three. Plus, he's averaging almost just a shade under 7 rebounds and 4 assists per game. So he's giving you a complete box stuffing type of game beyond the 42-point scoring, which obviously is not going to happen every night. But I think you have some confidence now that, like you said, even if he's not scoring 42, he can get you. I mean, this last game he got you 10 rebounds. He can shoot better from the field. He's dishing it out. He's playing better defense, as he pointed out. So I think he's just becoming a better overall basketball player beyond just taking over the scoring lead without Şengün.
See, that's the thing. I don't know, and I realistically, what he did last night, I don't think is sustainable.
certainly not 42 points.
But I think that when you look at it night in, night out, if he can be one of the best four players on the court, because we normally say that the better teams in the NBA have two superstars on each squad,
okay,
right?
So you're not saying one of the best four Rockets, just one of the best four players.
One of the best four players on the court.
Okay, I'm with
you now. Then you're absolutely maximizing what he can be for you, and that's where his ceiling is potential-wise for me. But if he can just be the best Jaylen he can be for this team can go very far to show improvement between now and the end of the season and be very encouraged about what they can do next year as they continue to develop. Because you're seeing Amen Thompson right alongside of him really develop. You're seeing, we already know what Şengün can be. We're seeing what, and look, I've never been one that set the bar too high for Jabari. But if Jabari's a double-double every night and he's kind of a poor man's Chris Bosh type player, but he's just he fills those roles for this team, I'm fine with it. Because you can't expect that everybody with the draft the way it goes nowadays is going to be a blooming superstar just because you took him in the first round.
Sure.
Tari's a really good player coming off the bench. You've got really good positive predicaments you could possibly be in. Like, if a man keeps playing the way he's playing, Jalen's playing the way he's playing, do you have room for Fred VanVleet, no matter what you're paying him, in the starting lineup because of what you're seeing from all these other guys? That's what you wanted to see in this season anyway, and now you're finally seeing some of the fruits of all this labor that we've had to labor through develop as a young roster.
Yeah, I think, obviously, and this is all contingent upon guys continuing to play well, but I think if you see Jaylen and Amen Thompson play close to this level, obviously you're not going to play as well. I mean, I believe Amen Thompson only missed two shots last night. I believe he was like 10 of 12 shooting. You're not going to do that every night. Jaylen Green's not going to score 42 every night. But if they can play at this sort of level with Fred VanVleet being basically only locked up here for two seasons, I think that's the answer. I don't think Fred VanVleet's going to be on this team past next season because you're going to want to give those starting spots to Jaylen Green and to Amen Thompson. But I'm getting back to Jaylen, so do you weigh in more on the side of this just being a hot streak for Jaylen, or do you think he's tapping into something that's more sustainable?
I'm going to go off the board, Brian, and I'm going to give you, this is progress.
Okay.
This is progress and development that we had hoped to see earlier in his career that thankfully we're seeing before it's too late. The fact that he's fine, and Jeremy and I would go back and forth on this, but I truly and strongly believe that he's finally 100% buying in. Because the way he grew up playing basketball, and on every level when he's played basketball, it's been give him the ball and get out of the way. And then from his perspective, I put blinders on, I go to the rack, I score, I shoot, I get fouled. I don't pass a lot, I don't rebound, I don't play defense. I do what I got to do to get where I got to go, both on this team, to the next level, and when I finally make it to the NBA. And what he's finally doing, and he was the last guy I firmly believe to do this on this roster, was buy into Udoka's system. Was understand, if I give it up, if I'm open, I'll get it back. If I give up a tough shot and pass the ball, I'll get a better shot later in the shot clock if I trust my teammates and the system. And now you're seeing, because of the fact you're hearing Udoka say, he's playing defense. He's sharing the basketball. He's understanding how to make other players better instead of just himself. This is the true progress and development that I had hoped to see earlier, but that he finally bought into with this system.
So when I hear you say words like, you know, buying in, playing defense, trusting his teammates, basically what I'm hearing when you say that is maturity, which is
part of it,
which is obviously key for a guy who's only 21 years old right now and came into the league obviously very, very young. But you mentioned kind of the way he came into basketball, playing a wide open style, attacking the basket, you know, not passing.
Isolation ball.
Isolation ball. And that, I mean, certainly Jaylen Green's not the only guy that comes into the league. Like, that's a lot of guys coming out of AAU ball and wherever they come from, especially guys that don't go to play in college. But, I mean, it's ludicrous to make the point or try to make the point that the Rockets are better without Şengün. It's a ridiculous take that I've seen some people put out there. I'm not saying that. But what I would ask is, do you think, and I it's a tough question about how they fit together, because it does seem like Jaylen fits more from, or he benefits more from a wide open, fast paced style. And then how does a guy like Alperen fit into that? How do you see their fit going forward when Alperen eventually gets back?
Well, does
what Alperen do well take away from what Jaylen does well?
See, it shouldn't. It shouldn't. They should complement each other. And I think that's where I would say to answer that question, the onus is going to be on Udoka and his staff.
Sure.
Because now,
that's what you're paying them big bucks for.
And you started the year making the focus running everything through Alpi. And then you remember, we were all going, what are we doing? we're really kind of transitioning, and suddenly it's put the ball in Jalen's hands, see what he can do. And I think that that was kind of the precursor to where we are now, where Udoka said, if we're ever going to get anywhere with the core that we currently are working with, he's going to have to show me that he can share the basketball. He has to understand, because the ball's in his hands, that doesn't mean you shoot it. And if we can get there, and this was kind of a test run in the middle of the season, then maybe we can take this to the next level. Now it's going to be fun for the coaching staff to say, now I know what my strong suit is with my two best players. This is how I restructure my offense to make sure I maximize everybody on the court. Because I think that was spacing. You're still talking about a center who passes really well and a guy who really wants to shoot it.
Yeah, he's not, Alpern's not the type of center that's clogging the paint.
And he's not going to hog the ball right, the way Jalen can. And that's why I think that there is a system to be recreated year to year that can benefit on both, benefit by maximizing both their strengths.
Yeah, especially as well as Şengün passes the ball. I think that is the fact that he could step outside the paint, the fact that he's a great passer, I think opens up the possibility of them fitting well together. Do you think we were too... Not you and I, but specifically, right, but us as a Houston Rockets fan base collective. Do you think we were too quick, maybe, to pass judgment on Jalen Green's early performance, considering the age, considering 2 years under Steven Silas and that just absolute car wreck of a coaching staff and a front office? I mean, obviously, it took a half a season, a little bit more than a half a season for him to finally get it under Udoka, but. We're talking about a guy that's still 21. You look at guys kind of like him coming out that early. T-Mac, it was year four for T-Mac, his age 21 season, before he finally started to play like the T-Mac we know, like the prime T-Mac. I'm not saying, obviously, that Jalen Green is at prime T-Mac levels, but I think sometimes we maybe rush to judgment too quick on Jalen Green. Is that fair?
I think bad habits are hard to break, Brian. I think that's where we're at. I think, yeah, what you said was fair. But I think that the other thing from a fan base perspective that everybody has to consider before they were – because, again, you're right. We never said trade him. At his very rock bottom, I said at least test the market and see what his value is across the league to be prepared if you have to move on from a guy that doesn't seem like he wants to buy into the system.
Right.
But bad habits are hard to break. So everything that we just got done talking about was also a product of when he got to the league, Silas turned the keys over to him, and there was it's to John Wall's point that no one wanted to believe was true when he pointed it out and said, it's not like this anywhere else in the NBA where you can do whatever you want. As a young kid, there's no one scolding you. There's no one, you know, reprimanding you. There's no one telling you how it's supposed to be done. You're held accountable for things. Silas was letting everybody just run amok so much that they got comfortable, and they thought, this is the NBA. And now what they're finding out with Udoka, with Van Vliet, with veterans that hold them accountable is, I had to change my bad habits in order to be the kind of player that make good things happen for my team. It's taken him longer than the other guys on the squad, but now you're starting to see who he could truly be, and that's why it's not too late, and you can, regardless of what you choose to do, you're in a good spot.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot more to get into on the Rockets. On the other side, I think we should get into – I mean, hey, they're only 2.5 back right now with the Warriors, so we got to talk about that on the other side of the break.
About Amen Thompson.
Because yeah, Amen Thompson and Jabari as well. I think we got to get some thoughts in on those guys as well.
I don't think anybody's benefited more from maybe – Alpi being out and being in the starting lineup than Amen Thompson. So plenty more to get to. You guys want to join us? Hey, we're at Wakefield Crowbar here in the Heights, and you should be here too as you get ready for the madness this weekend. But the bigger thing is, whether you see us or not, the text is working, the Twitch is up, the YouTube channel's going. Reach us some way if you want to be a part of the conversation. Let me know your thoughts on the Rockets and everything else. 713-780-3776 gets you into the program. Text or call that number. Like I said, check us out on Twitch and or YouTube. Back with more. It's B-Mac and Joel in the Bees in the Hive right here on ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wakefield Crowbar, here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Brian McDonald.
Jeremy on the road again, Willie Nelson style, covering the Cougs as we get tournament bound and see them get ready for their big action as a one seed. In the meantime, my good friend Brian McDonald sitting next to me on my left as we are at Wakefield Crowbar with the pretty bartenders and all the pretty people hanging out on a Wednesday. Getting ready for the tournament, glasses in the air, people don't care, fun everywhere. Be at a Wakefield Crowbar here in the Heights. Stop by, see us. They're going to be here all night, so you should be too. If you want to get some volleyball in outside, go do that as well. But tons of TVs, lots to do. BMAC and
I. Yeah, this is a great spot if you want to watch some March Madness here. I mean, there's TVs everywhere you look. You can't turn your head without seeing a TV. Plus,
fantastic.
I mean, tons of alcohol and beer.
Yeah, not only that, but you know,
great
spring
food.
Training, baseball,
yeah, great, yeah, exactly.
Food. Yep, all kinds of good things. We got the promo team out here, so they got giveaways and lots of goodies for you as well. Support us, but come out and support Wakefield Crowbar. We love these guys. They're up. They're always good to us. All right, so we were talking about the Rockets, the big game, the big win last night. Now, granted, look.
It is the way. Yeah, you want to call it the big game because, like, Jalen played well, Amen played well.
Yeah,
but
performance-wise.
It's the Wizards. So.
Yeah, performance-wise, big game from the guys you want to see big games from.
Sure.
But.
There you go.
With a grain of salt because you're playing the worst team in the NBA, along with the Detroit Pistons. And the Wiz really aren't even worth that. And yet, you know, and I'm seeing a former Wisconsin number one draft pick in Johnny Davis, who looks awful. I mean, if you're a Rockets fan and you watched that game last night, just be grateful that your top 10 picks all look way better than Johnny Davis looks with the freaking Wizards, because that is an embarrassment. They are awful. They traded for Jordan Poole and his $93 million contract. God, you should be happy you don't have him on your squad either.
Jordan Poole has announcers mocking the fact that he got punched in the face by Draymond Green still during NBA games. Yeah. Now, the Wizards, I mean, it's kind of what the franchise has been basically forever. I mean, the last title was, what, in the 70s with Wes Unseld?
Yeah.
They had a nice run for a little while with Gilbert Arenas where they were at least a playoff team. But, yeah, that's forever been a kind of a joke of a franchise.
Yeah, they're bad. Your Rockets are looking good these days, six in a row now. And it doesn't matter who you're playing. You don't make the schedule. You just play to win, and that's what they're doing right now. Playing very well. Bulls are up tomorrow night, I believe, or at Toyota Center.
Yeah, the Bulls tomorrow night at Toyota Center. So you mentioned they're six in a row, and they're 8-1 now in March, and that's got the Rockets only 2.5 back of the Warriors.
I think that's where I was going.
I think we had all kind of written off the idea of making the playing game, but I mean, 2.5 back. I mean, are you starting to believe? Is it realistic?
No, I'm not.
Come on, wet blanket.
No, look, I'm not trying to be the wet blanket. I'm trying to tell you from a realistic perspective, I still believe that they would probably be one and done anyway. Yes, it would be nice
to
get that under their belt. But when you look at the teams that look like they're going to be currently in or around the play-in game and the Lakers being the final seed right now, and Lakers, Golden State, you know, Phoenix is dabbling, Dallas is right around that line, Sacramento. I mean, tell me one of those teams where you think the Rockets would have a chance of beating them.
Well, I mean, Sacramento, they beat three times this year.
But that's also the regular season.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, I can't look at their success against the Kings and say they have no chance. But I guess most of my optimism comes from looking at the schedule, and there's certainly a couple automatic losses, or at least probable losses on the remaining schedule this month. But when you look at they do have a home game against the Warriors, so they got at least one chance at home where they play much better, although they have played better on the road recently, to make up a game against the team that they're trailing for that 10th spot. But they have the Bulls, like you said, at home tomorrow. The Bulls are a good team, but they're not a world beater.
They're beatable because they got DeMar DeRozan and they've got, you know, a few other guys and Vooch is back, but overall, you don't have Zach LaVine. It's not the team that they put together.
It's not an unbeatable team.
It's beatable. It's a beatable team.
Yeah, the Bulls are next. You have two games against the Jazz this month. The Jazz aren't a great team. You have a game against the Trailblazers at home, who are awful.
Should win.
So
that's
four at least possible wins. But then you also have at the Thunder and home for the Mavericks, which are probably losses. But 4-2 over the remaining portion over the rest of the month isn't impossible. And if the Rockets did go 4-2, that would put them at .500 going into April.
And now,
I think you certainly have to consider them a live dog at that point.
But here's where I would draw the line in the sand and say, I don't care whether they make the play-in or not, but if this team finishes with a .500 record or better, and we talk about, was it a successful season? Did they exceed expectations? Whether they make the play-in or not, if they flirt with .500 and or somehow find a way to finish .500 or better, that is a massive win for Udoka and his staff in turning this entire thing around.
Yeah, I mean, there are 33 wins right now. I don't remember exactly where you were, you and Jeremy were before the season, but I think even the most optimistic fans
I was under on that number. I was around 35. 32,
okay, yeah,
35.
See, that's what I was saying. Like, they're at 33 now. I think most, even the optimistic fans were probably at 35. I don't think I saw anyone that had them even getting to 40. And 40 is, I think, a legit possibility at this point. I mean, I just went over four winnable games remaining this month. So, yeah, I'm with you. If they get to, let's say, I don't know, let's say 39 wins, they didn't get to 40. They get to 39 wins, they miss it the playing game. I don't see how you could say this season was anything but a massive success as far as the team taking the right steps forward and progressing in a way that gives you a lot of confidence going into the next season that there's another step beyond that that would get them into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think as you look at this team, and we were talking about Jalen in the first segment, but when you want to, you transition to saying why they are where they are. In part, it's because of the two other guys that we're not talking about as much right now because so much has been put on and so much scrutiny has been put on Jalen Green.
Aman and Jabari?
Yeah, when you look at those two guys and you look at their development, I think Jabari was a guy that we thought was further along, obviously because Aman was coming in out of 1 year in a league that no one thinks is anywhere close to high Division I basketball,
sure,
where you're looking at him going, he's going to take some time to develop. But as we look at the development of both of these guys, it's part of the reason why we can be more optimistic as a squad for not only the future, but for this season for this team.
Yeah, I mean, Bruce Pearl, I think, came on our airwaves when the Rockets drafted Jabari and basically said, you know, he's ready to go. And that really wasn't the case his rookie season last year. I mean, he showed flashes, especially towards the end of the season, but he was not delivering early on what we were hoping from the third overall pick. But now you're seeing Jabari turning into a double-double machine, and I kind of think maybe we've undersold his potential a little bit. I think there was a point in this season where he was playing decently but not, you know, really ever leading the team to a win, where it seemed like people were capping his upside as a nice role player, but that was kind of it. I think what we're seeing from these double-doubles that he's putting up, I believe it was 18 and 14 last night against the Wizards, I think I don't ever see him as being obviously the star of the team,
right.
The one on the team, probably not even the two on the team. But I think his ceiling is a little bit better than role player, at least.
Yeah, he could be your third best player, and you could be a really,
exactly,
really good team, assuming your number one and your number two are go-to type guys. Here's the thing, Brian. Hot take or not, but this is something that I'm going to just call out the entire city for in terms of not calling out enough how bad Steven Silas was. It's easy to say the
record
was bad.
Never ran a play for Jabari.
But he never ran a play, period. Okay,
yeah,
let's just be honest.
Okay, good point.
He did not run plays. He did not run a structured offense. He did not discipline his players. I've heard from lots of people in and around the organization, hey, you know what? He was always getting his hand slapped by the general manager, and he wasn't allowed to discipline them. That's BS. Because Udoka came in from day one and said, there's a new sheriff in town. This is how we're going to do things. And that's the way it's supposed to be done as a head coach in the NBA. But Jabari's development is another one, just like Şengün. And Şengün was not too careful in terms of saying, I finally have coaching, and that's why I'm taking this big leap. I think Jabari's done the same thing. You're right. He's not going to be one of your two best players on a really good team, but he's capable of being an above-average starting player in this league that gets these double-doubles and makes his team better, and that's what we're seeing with his development, which we never would have seen under Silas.
Can he be Chris Bosh? Or a poor man's Chris Bosh?
Yeah, poor man is why I like to go with that, because people don't realize how valuable Chris Bosh was and all the things
he
did.
I mean, obviously, LeBron and D-Wade were on his teams, but he was the third on those Miami
Heat
teams.
You hear some of these podcasts lately and guys that were on those Heat teams saying, if LeBron didn't play, D-Wade could step it up. But if Bosh didn't play, they were screwed because of the fact that he did so many things.
Well, they didn't have a lot of help down low also.
He rebounded. He still moved the basketball. He played smart. He knew how to defend.
He could space the floor.
Yes. So he was a guy that brought so much to the table. Jabari's biggest thing is understanding, when I got a little guy on me, that doesn't mean shoot the three. That means those are the times when I really need to put my back to the basket, back him down, shoot over the top of him, and understand he's too small. If you have a big on you, those are the times when you use your athleticism and say, whether I put it on the floor or I move in space, that's how I take advantage of a matchup against a big. If he understands his matchups and what to do based on who he's got on him, he could be even better.
So, Amen Thompson, I mean, he's been absolutely fantastic recently. Let's get into him before the little bit of time that we have left this segment. 10 of 12 last night shooting, 25 points, I believe 10 rebounds. I mean, everyone rightfully before the draft happened and during this season has pointed out, I was like, yeah, but a shot. But I don't know. I don't know where you fall on this, but do you think he can reach the maybe the level we're hoping for him, even if the shot never looks super pretty? I think we are in agreement that it can develop. It can get better. We've seen guys like Joakim Noah and a few others who had Amari Stoudemire mentioned the last time this came
Lonzo
up.
Lonzo Ball.
Lonzo Ball came into the league with horrible shots and never were maybe knockdown shooters, but became above average shooters.
Yeah, Lonzo and LaMelo Ball added to that list because of the fact that the kid's a gym rat, right? So if he gets with the right coaching, again, which is key for the staff that you now have, and they work with him, the sky's the limit. But there's also a difference where you draw a line and say, you can be a good shooter, but you don't have to necessarily be a good three-point shooter. If you're both phenomenal, if you never develop a three-point shot, because he is a five-tool player, he brings so much to the table, he sees the floor, he passes well, he's long, he rebounds, he defends, that whether you're Russell Westbrook, and people will hate that comparison because Russ obviously had a ceiling and people criticize his inability to shoot. He has good enough form where he can be a mid-range shooter. He can be a scorer. He can do so many things to make you better. He's not, I mean, the worst thing he could be is Ben Simmons. And Ben Simmons, believe it or not, still has a lot of ability.
But he has a fear
of shooting. Russ doesn't have a fear of shooting. Russ just was never a good three-point shooter. I think that he can still be a huge, big-time key piece to this puzzle without having to ever develop and fully get to being a great three-point shooter, but he does have to continue to work on his mid-range.
Yeah, I think what you said there is key. Like, I don't think he can get to where we hope he'll get to if he never develops a consistent mid-range game. But I think you can live without the three. Jason Kidd wasn't a super three-point shooter. You've mentioned, like, Russell Westbrook, Allen Iverson weren't super, super three-point shooters. But they were able to take guys off the bounce. And when they got them out of off balance, got the space from separation, they were able to hit the mid-range shot or take it to the hole. And so if Amen Thompson could develop that part of his game, there's no reason why he can't be a plus starter with the ceiling of potentially a second. To me, I think his potential could be second-best player on the team. Now, that's obviously team-dependent. Albert Shingun and Jalen Green have played very well in Shingun's place well all season long. Jalen Green over this last six-game streak. But I love the ceiling of Amen Thompson. I'm way in on him right now.
Plus, Brian, a lot of times we forget just how young he is, to the point where he can't even
go. Is he 19 still?
Yeah, he can't even go into Wakefield Crowbar and get himself a cocktail yet.
I don't believe they allow anyone in as over under 21.
That's why we're
10
not,
o'clock at night.
This is why we're not even close to putting a ceiling on what he can do and what he can't do. Because year one in the NBA, I don't think anybody expected to see this much this soon from a kid that probably wasn't going to get
everyone
many minutes.
Everyone knew he was raw.
But he's not going to get many minutes either. You just threw $40 million plus a year at Fred VanVleet.
Right.
He wasn't supposed to be playing, and now he's starting. And when he's starting, he's taking advantage of it. And the numbers he's putting up, if you truly believe he hasn't fully developed his shot yet, just give you more encouragement that the sky's the limit for this kid.
Yeah, I'm sold on him. And it'll be interesting to see what happens down the stretch. I had to kind of pay off on where we started with this. I think they're alive in their chance to catch the Warriors. I would definitely not predict them to. I wouldn't put money down on them catching the Warriors. But 2.5 back. A decent schedule over the rest of the month, plus a home game against the Warriors where he can directly make up a game. I think that's possible. But it's hard not to be excited and optimistic about these young stars in the Houston Rockets
no doubt.
Right now.
We've got text messages I'll get to. Everybody chiming in on the Rockets. And we've got more to get to on the Rockets, of course, but we also got the NCAA. We've got Astros baseball. And an interesting conversation when we get back to kind of broach the subject of the inevitable that people aren't really encouraged to start talking about, and that is, when does JV fall off that cliff? When does the decline become too big and insurmountable?
I think people
to pass
are going
to
like my answer.
Okay. Well, I mean, that might be the first time. So with that being said, BMAC's answer awaits you as we get into the JV discussion next. But again, feel free to chime in and be a part of the show, 713-780-3776, to call or text. Hit us up on YouTube or on Twitch as well, as we love to interact with all those fine folks. And we'll be back with more. It's the Killer Bees, live from Wakefield Crowbar in the Heights, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wakefield Crowbar.
Head back, as the man says, with the sultry pipes. BMAC and
sultry
me.
Sultry pipes. Yeah. Wow. You know? That's a nice compliment you gave him there.
We're going to work on him at some point just doing movie trailers for us with
In a World.
But there you go. There you go. That's a classic movie trailer line.
Where Wakefield Crowbar hosts The Hive, and it's
If Michael Carroll is listening, there's our request for whatever our next, not this week, it'll be too quick of a turnaround, but any remote we have next week, we need a movie trailer rejoin.
That's right.
From the voiceover, big voice guy.
55-35, BMAC, is Jabari to be looked at as a better Draymond Green?
I would certainly say his potential is way better than Draymond Green. Draymond Green was obviously a valuable role player, but he was never a guy you would bet on giving you 20, whereas Jabari can get you 20, and he's also not a guy you would expect very often to get you, you know, 14 rebounds like Jabari did last night.
They're
different types of players, so it's not really an apples to apples comparison. But
if you're gonna take, like, in a nutshell, put the spectrum of Jabari's career, the dream is Bosh. The realistic is Draymond. And I think he's better than Draymond. I don't know that he'll ever be close to the full Bosh. But if you get that from him, that's all you need.
Yeah, I guess I get your point. Like if some combination of Jalen, Amen Thompson, and Şengün could be a legit 1-2 on your team, then you're fine if Jabari develops into is a Draymond Green type as your three, as your glue guy, maybe the defensive specialist, the guy that can get his points but is not he's not getting the ball as the first read in any set. So I don't want to settle for Draymond Green because I see Jabari's ceiling is a whole lot higher. Especially since I believe they're different types of players.
He's a better shooter.
I think Jabari's more likely to develop into a plus the post player than Draymond. But I see as a downside guarantee if you could sell me that was his floor with your other guys becoming the ones and two on the team, then I guess that wouldn't be a bad scenario.
Yeah, and other people are chiming in about the Rockets and says, you know, I don't think that. The Rockets right now should be trading anybody. Someone said, do what Boston did. Let these young players play together, 8-4, 5-8, and they have championship talent. Now, I'm also not going to go so far as to drink the Kool-Aid and say they have championship talent. They have a nucleus that is going to be very competitive in the NBA, and they have the ability with some adds and maybe some subtractions that make them better than what you currently see. But I think that you're right. The big crossroads could be when Jabari's contract comes up, if he thinks he's a max player, you got to let him walk. And you got to try and find something for him because that's where the problem between realistic and the expectations of contract come to making you have to make a harsh decision. Jalen's a guy you're going to discuss still as a max player. A man has the ability to become a max player. I don't think Jabari is a max-type player.
So how many players would you say on their roster right now they have capable of turning into max-level players?
Three.
Şengün, Jalen, and the men?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But thankfully, obviously, with the decisions that you would have on guys like Jalen, you don't have to make that now. You don't even really have to make it next season. So you got time to figure that out. I wouldn't necessarily completely blanket statement, completely rule out the idea of signing Jalen Green down the road to some sort of max deal because I'd want the benefit of knowing what he becomes over the next, you know,
0974 will kind of pile on you. And
okay.
Give me your thoughts
on this.
Bring it on. They say it's a tough decision. I don't buy this as who Jalen Green is. He's shown stretches like this before and at the end of previous seasons. With the Rockets that are in rebuild mode, I feel this is the time to maximize his trade value. Ultimately, I don't think he's ever going to be an all-star level player. What says you?
I think he's going to be an all-star level player, and maybe that's the damning praise because all-star level player doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot. I think Jeremy would definitely argue that.
Who? We don't talk about
him. Oh, you're right. Here. He's on the road, right? He doesn't exist right
that's
now.
Right.
I don't get what the rush is to trade him. Like, I understand the idea that maybe this is just a hot streak because it is six games. Like, the numbers I gave in second one, it's
even
only
if you
over
don't
six
trade
games.
Him, the fact is they don't trust him. They said they've seen this play before, and it doesn't play out the way they like. That you're gonna see glimpses all the time to tease you, but he's never truly gonna be the all-star player you thought you were getting.
Yeah, I guess I would. My rebuttal to that would be, like, you can't trade him right now anyway, right? So you might as well keep an open mind as to what he'd become. And sure, right now it's only a six-game sample size, but if he continues to do this over the rest of March and then into April, maybe even to the early part of next season, if you still have him through the summer when all the moves are being made, then that six-game sample size can become something you're not saying is just a hot streak, and you're starting to say that's who he is. So I'm at least pushing for an open mind in giving him basically a pass for the last 2 years under Steven Silas, because I know he didn't develop as fast.
But time's running out now, because you know that at a certain point, like I said, the same thing I said about Jabari.
Now, why would you say time is running out?
Because he's going to push for a max deal, and his contract's going to come up where you got to make a decision.
Yeah, I get it, but you don't have to make that decision now.
Not now, but this offseason you better start thinking about it hard, because, like I said, you've got 1 year left, and you got to make a decision on him whether he's good enough to hang on to and at what price, or that he's going to want more than you're willing to offer and get something before he walks away.
Yeah, it's fair. It's fair. Like, if you believe – I guess it really comes down to what you believe in Jalen Green. Like, if you're completely convinced, like the texter was, that this is nothing more than a hot streak and he's going to revert back to some lesser form than what we've seen recently, then you should absolutely try to capitalize on maybe a perceived upward swing in his play. But I don't know. Like, again, if he continues to do this over the rest of March and the rest of April, I'm going to be very open to the idea that, hey, this guy was the second overall pick in the draft, and it wasn't some massive reach. He could possibly be actually that good. I'm at least open to the idea.
Here's one thing that is just a bit of advice. I'm not looking to be Roosh and try and give real advice to a real NBA player when I never played real NBA basketball. But I think I've been around the block enough to say this.
But you stayed in the Holiday Express?
Stay the hell away from social media. Last night with Vanessa after the game.
Oh, the baby stuff?
The family stuff, the baby stuff. You know, he's getting beat up all over the place because of Gilbert Arenas saying what he has done with his baby mama in the past, and others chiming in on their age and everything else. And previous to this, when he was posting things like, sometimes I can't even be myself because of the fact that there's so much going on a daily basis pressuring him. Best thing he can do is stay as far away from social media, no matter how much he wants the attention and all the, you know, the cachet for the fire takes and what he's wearing and all these other things. If he could just focus on basketball and stay away from social media, he'd be far better off as a basketball player. I don't care about the other stuff, but as a basketball player, he'd be better off.
I mean, you're not wrong, but, I mean, he's 21. He's not going to stay off of social media. I mean, hell, I'm 40 and I can't stay off of social media, or at least off of Twitter. I have to try to get myself, you know, to put down the phone at times. So I don't think it's – I'm with you to a degree. I think it's less, though, about the amount of times he spends
on
that.
Stop worrying and reading comments from others.
It's less about the amount of time you spend on it. It's more about the maturity and how you respond to what you see. And yeah, that remains to be seen, but – yeah, like, even if you move Jalen Green for, let's say, another player with upside or whatever you're trying to trade him for, there's no guarantee that the next player you're trying to get is going to be someone who stays off of social media. I mean, everyone of that age is going to have a problem with that to a degree.
But just like life, Brian, this is what we're talking about. It's still a city divided. It's a fan base divided. On one hand, I'll read you text.
Okay.
Jalen is a monster. He's young. Please don't trade him. Next one is, I don't want to pay him the max. That's the main reason I would trade him.
Yeah.
Okay? Next one, is he streaky, a la Lin Sanity? I think he's better than Jeremy Lin could ever be.
That's not fair.
Right?
That's
he may
fair.
Never have that full streak like Lin Sanity, which is good, because he's better than Jeremy Lin no matter what.
That's not fair.
So you look at it from both perspectives. Y'all are drinking red Kool-Aid. No, I'm not. On what part of it? I'm trying to be as realistic as I can possibly be. I don't think he's ever going to be Kobe Bryant, which he was compared to coming out.
Oh, no.
But I also don't think he's a bust like a lot of people were making him out to be by midseason this year. So, you know, everybody's saying you're describing Jalen like he's Ben Simmons. No, you got it wrong, because you're listening with a different orifice. We're describing Amen Thompson to some degree, like at the worst case scenario, he could be Ben Simmons because he doesn't shoot it very well. But I never said that, because the one thing I've always said is, as much as Ben Simmons has talent, Amen's already a better shooter than Ben will ever be, and he's not afraid to shoot the ball.
Yeah, and that's the key thing, the second part, not being afraid to shoot. Look, no, if someone misheard what I said or misinterpreted what I said earlier, I am certainly by no way saying that Jalen Green has some sort of Kobe Bryant upside. All I'm saying, and maybe this loops me in with the people that drink the red Kool-Aid, because certainly if you ever go into like the for you section of Twitter, mine is always just filled with people, and it's mostly the pro Jalen side, but it's just filled with all these nonstop Jalen Green tweets about, you know, that he's the first player at this age to do this and that, and just singing the praises of his upside. So I'm not on, or at least I'm not going as far as that section of Rockets Twitter. I'm just saying I'm open to the idea because he's played really well, because it started before Şengün went out, and it's not just a product of more shots because Şengün's out, and because the coaching changed, I'm open to the idea that he's actually made an improvement. It's beyond a hot streak. And if he's capable in showing you the flashes of a guy that was drafted second overall, I think you at least got to be open to that idea and let it play out over the rest of the season.
I think the main thing that I've said this with Jeremy multiple times, too, that you take away from this team is if you're drinking the red Kool-Aid, this is the one text we got, this is a championship team, keep it together.
No, I wouldn't say that. Not yet. Not as currently constructed.
But when you think about the two guys we haven't mentioned because they haven't played, and then the third guy that isn't going to play the rest of the season. But we're sitting here debating three guys fairly and trying to be as honest as we can be. But when you think about the potential of Cam Whitmore, when you think about what Tari Eason can be, if Tari Eason, and we talk about ceilings, if his ceiling is a sixth man, he's a Swiss Army knife, could be one of the better six men in this league for a long period of time. When you think about Cam Whitmore, we're not contemplating his shot. We're not contemplating his ability.
Now, you know he could score.
He just has to defend. He has to understand, like Jalen did, that there are other things to do with the ball than shoot it every time it touches your hands. But all the ability is there, that the nucleus of six guys that you have is good enough to stick with. It's just what pieces when you get done with Dylan Brooks and a ridiculously bad contract, and Fred VanVleet, who is exactly what you needed him to be in the short term on a short-term contract, how do you replace those two guys with guys better than them for this unit that you're putting together? Because I like the nucleus they're building.
Yeah, and we had Kelly Eco on, I guess, last week or the week before, and we asked him kind of a similar question, like, do the Rockets have the young core of a potential championship team? And he still thinks they're a move away. I think the question is, like, who are you willing to trade to get that piece, and when do you make it? The reason I'm maybe holding out on Jalen Green, because if Jalen Green can reach the potential that it seems like he is showing over these last six games that he was drafted to have, then your upside of trading Jalen Green is then getting back a player like what Jalen Green would develop into. So I don't want to rush to make him the guy that you trade, but certainly I think they've got another move in the necessary move before they reach that championship level.
Yeah, look, they have the ability to be flexible. They have a ton of talent on the roster.
Like you said, they got the young core. They potentially have
and
a starting five
pick,
and a six-man.
Brooklyn's pick is enough to say that you can still get better this offseason no matter what else you do.
Yeah, Brooklyn's pick's going to be a lottery pick.
It should
be.
So there you go. There's some Rockets talk for you. We're going to get to the JV stuff next.
Oh, yeah, we had JV stuff.
Yeah, we'll flip it over to JV and the Astros because, look, we're getting closer and closer to opening day. If Verlander is not going to start the season on the roster, how quickly will he be back? We'll see. But is this the beginning of the end? And when are you willing to start talking about it? Or are you just the orange Kool-Aid drinking Astros fan that believes it will never end? We'll talk about that next as we continue to roll forward. It's much more in hour number one of the 3-hour extravaganza. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wakefield Crowbar.
Hey, BMAC and Blank from Wakefield Crowbar. The Hive is alive here and there and everywhere, including Twitch and YouTube. Want to remind you, Wakefield Crowbar is your place to be for all the madness, all the games, all the time, complete with a 24-foot TV wall and over 40 TVs showing all the games. You gotta be here. During the games, $19 Modelo Towers, $6 margaritas, $3 candy shots. You know you like those. They'll also have $2 shots and $1 beers for MLB opening weekend and a fantastic Easter brunch on the 31st and the Easter Bunny on the 24th for all your family plans. But get out to Wakefield Crowbar for all the madness in March.
Yeah, and one more reminder for everyone listening. It's that time again for ESPN 97.5 and 92.5's 6th Annual Bracket Madness presented by DraftKings at the Golden Nugget, supported by Houston Powder Coaters. We'll be giving away tons of prizes worth over $50 each. Prizes include a great list of prizes, but prizes include a gift basket from Gentle Ben valued at $200. Jeremy I certainly love that.
Who?
Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, unnamed Killer B. $50 gift cards to Star Pizza, East River 9, Republic Boot Company, and much more. Head to ESPN975.com, and under the promotions tab, you can register for free and catch us broadcasting live, of course, today at Wakefield Crowbar, tomorrow Carbach Brewing, and then on Friday we'll be at Nick's Place.
Nick's Place, always great
food.
Yeah,
looking forward to that for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, so let's get into some of this Astros talk, because the talk that nobody wants to have is the fear that everybody had to go through when we heard JV was a little behind going into his preparation for spring training this year. And then thankfully for all of us, because we are heavily relying on him, at least for this season, we understood that it wasn't going to be a big-time long-term
injury.
Certainly
seems so right
now.
So
that was a big win. But at a certain point, you have to be realistic, and you know that there's a threshold this year that if he gets to, you have him for another season. I think it's 150 innings.
But 140.
Okay, close enough. Whenever we get close to that, that's one discussion to have. But at a certain point, you have to start having the discussion and consider how far can we go with Justin Verlander and how long can he go chasing the records we know he wants to get to, strikeouts, wins, all those kind of things, and how it correlates to how valuable a piece he can be for your Houston Astros.
So I think when I see a lot of people speculate how much longer Justin Verlander has, they often seem to rely on the average pitcher. Like the average pitcher at age this does this. My problem with that is Justin Verlander, for the entirety of his career, has never been the average pitcher. So my pushback on that, and kind of my point in what I'm about to go over, is that when you're comparing Justin Verlander and trying to figure out how long can he reasonably go, I think he's talked about wanting to get to age 45, kind of like Tom Brady had that goal. And he's obviously wanted to be, he's obviously compared himself to Nolan Ryan at times. You can't compare Justin Verlander just the average pitcher. I think you have to compare him to his contemporaries, his peers, and those are the elite of the elite of the elite pitchers. Mm-hmm. And look, his overall numbers last year, certainly the strikeout numbers have gone down over the last couple of years. ERA was a little bit higher last year than we'd seen in the past few seasons. But I didn't really notice any sort of drop-off other than that strikeout number. Over the second half of last season, when he's with the Astros, away from the Mets, who apparently didn't believe in analytics, mm-hmm. his ERA over those final 15 starts in the second half of the season was 2.92. Yeah. I mean, that's great. You're 40 years old, and you're pitching to a 2.92 ERA, so you're not seeing any real slippage there. And when you compare him to me, who he should be compared to, the absolute elites of the elites, his peers, the power pitchers who pitch this deep into their career, you're talking about Nolan Ryan, you're talking about Roger Clemens, you're talking about Randy Johnson, in my opinion. And you can see all the numbers for yourself on Baseball Reference. I won't bore you with all of them. But when you look into their age 41 and 42, 43 seasons, these guys aren't really hitting that age cliff to age 43 or 44. So I think Verlander has this year, assuming he gets back fine with the shoulder, and then maybe another year or two beyond this to be actually still a top-level performer.
So, yeah, and just looking over some of the numbers, if you take their 41 age season and take the averages, the high ERA was a sub-4 ERA of Randy Johnson, 3.79. The low, Roger Clemens, 2.98. The mid was just that, the mid, Nolan Ryan, 3.52. When you start looking at that and going, look, I don't think this is the year he falls off. I think it is coming around the corner. I think it is closer than we'd like to admit. But I think that this year, that's why I wasn't losing my mind when people were like, oh, my God, he's 2 weeks behind. This could be the beginning of the end. This could be craziness for the Astros. No, let's not press the panic button just yet. He's a power pitcher, you're right. He's a smart pitcher. He's learned to, much like a Tom Brady with the comparisons in the NFL for as long as he played, to adapt his craft as his skill set changed, to where we know he can think the game. We know that he knows how to think through at bats, pitch by pitch. I think it's very fair and reasonable to say he's probably going to be somewhere between 3 and 4 in his ERA this year, but with this team, that offense, and his ability to compete, I don't think we're going to see a big drastic fall off this season.
Yeah, and that's my overall point. Certainly the fall off, obviously, at some point is coming. I don't think it's this year. And I don't think it's next year. I mean, you mentioned some of the numbers. Nolan Ryan, who he likes to compare himself to, didn't actually hit his drop-off to age 46. I mean, age 45, Nolan Ryan still had a 3.72 ERA. I mean, you guys had, you mentioned Randy Johnson. Age 44 season for him, he was 3.91. Now, certainly 3.91, if Verlander hit that, that would no longer put him in a spot where he's your ace, obviously. But if you're talking about Verlander giving you 150-plus innings with a sub-4 ERA at age 44, you're fine if then, you know,
Robert... He's not Bartolo Colon.
Right.
I mean, he might not be your ace, but if he's one of your three best pitchers or four best pitchers, now he's going to have to give you a significant discount on what he wants going forward on his next contract. But if he's pitching even to that level at that age with the other pitchers that you have on this roster... You still have the potential to be very, very, very good with starting pitchers.
Yeah, I think, like, this year I still think he could be your ace. I still think he could be your ace next year. But like you said, even as he does start to decline, which maybe happens age 43, age 44, I still think he's capable of being a third starter on this team. I still think he's a player capable of giving you 150-plus innings with a sub-4 ERA, which still has a lot of value. And you're right, you probably would have to ask him for a discount to bring him back. But if that's going to be at a point where he's getting really close to 300 wins, and I'm not saying he's going to give you the quote-unquote hometown discount, but I certainly think he's going to factor in where he plays next, consider a team that's actually going to give him a chance to get the win total he needs to get to.
His ego says that he had to get to certain things, just like he's chasing the stats now. He had to get to the highest AAV pitcher at a certain point in his career. He got that with this last deal. So that's off. He's checked that off. He's gotten the World Series rings. He's gotten the Cy Youngs. Now he's chasing these other things, and he's got to realize his best case to get there sooner is a team that puts up a lot of runs, that has a chance to go, you know, with competitive games deep in the season, still gives him the clout that he's looking for from a exposure standpoint too. You have the ability with this rotation to say, if Hunter Brown keeps developing the way we all think he's going to stuff-wise to someday have Cy Young caliber stuff, to your point about who's the ace, if you have four guys to choose from, then you are in a premier situation compared to just about any other team in baseball, no matter how much money the Yankees and the Dodgers have. Because if you can choose between JV, Fromber, Javier, and Hunter Brown, year to year, situation to situation, who's going to be your ace? The other three guys are going to be in a position to be better than average for you in the top of your rotation all the way to the four spot. And we're not even talking about McCullers or Garcia or other guys that could still see some good years ahead. That's why they could still be in such a good position from a pitching perspective.
Certainly, and I think that is obviously team-dependent based upon what they do with their roster over these next couple years. Like, if for some reason Fromber walks, they let some of these other guys walk, and you're in a position where you would need Justin Verlander to be your ace, then maybe that puts him in a worse position. Like, you don't, maybe you wouldn't want to pay a guy his age to be your ace. But if Hunter Brown and Christian Javier take the next step forward, if you're able to retain Fromber Valdez, and now you're asking Justin Verlander at age 43, 44 to be your fourth starter, and we've seen through, like again, the historical data, guys he's similar to, Randy Johnson, Nolan Ryan, Roger Clemens, guys like him, those power pitchers into their mid-40s have been capable, those Hall of Fame caliber arms have been capable of still being third to fourth starter caliber. Then, yeah, Verlander coming back to chase 300 wins as your fourth starter would be something that only would still be beneficial to the team, but I think is actually realistic.
Yeah, no, look, I think that's why, as much as we start talking about, without Jeremy and Nick Caserio, talking about windows and wondering when the window's going to start to shut, how long the window's going to stay open, when you start at least the conversation by knowing you have Yordan wrapped up long-term, you have the options we just got done talking about with starting pitching, you have Hader for the foreseeable future, along with Abreu, regardless whether you have Presley or not. You have all the makings of the structure of a team that is far from being done competing for a World Series.
Yeah.
And that's all you can ask for as a fan.
Yeah, I think every time people see, and this was kind of the point of the segment, I think every time someone sees an update on Justin Verlander about him being behind, I think they automatically rush to the judgment because he's 41. Like, okay, here it is. This is the start of the decline. But look, again, stop comparing Justin Verlander to, you know, the average pitcher at age 41, because the average pitcher doesn't even get to age 41. They're already out of the league by that point. So when you're comparing Verlander and trying to come up with some sort of statistical trend to point to what you could expect from him at that age, point to the elites like we went over with Randy Nolan and Roger Clemens, and those numbers all speak favorably to what we could expect from Verlander over the next couple years of his career.
No doubt about it. All right, that's first hour of the show. It's in the books. It's in the rearview mirror. Windshield's still big. Lots of things still to get to, talk about, and you always are a part of it. 713-780-3776. Call or text. Hit us on YouTube. Hit us up on Twitch. Look, we've got the NCAA tournament coming up, and it's really, really close. We saw some games last night. We'll see a couple games tonight. But the real, real madness starts tomorrow. Let's start breaking it down for you. Let's get into it. Who do you like? Who you don't like? Who are your sleepers? Who are your favorites? Who's the first number one you think might be falling by the wayside? Do you think it's the Cougs? I don't know, people. Are you betting with your heart or your head? We'll talk about all that next as we open up hour number three of the show. Killer Bees live from the Crowbar in the Heights. Stop by and see us if you get a chance. We'll be here until 6 o'clock. BMAC and myself, more Hive coming up next. ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM.